Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Afternoon, everybody. It is a day where, for all the valid reasons, we're going to spend a fair amount of time on a political assassination, a story which broke while we were on the air yesterday at about 1:30, excuse me. And sadly, in the hours after we were done, the news was announced that Charlie Kirk was murdered. And the video is out there. Charlie Kirk had become a very influential conservative. Extraordinary success with the president in the last election. There's no denying that. Charlie Kirk's influence on that. You look at with younger voters in swing states from where Joe Biden was in 2020 to where Kamala Harris was in 2024 against the same opponent, Donald Trump. Younger voters swung 24%. Was all of that 100% tied to Charlie Kirk? No, but this was a heavy emphasis for him becoming more popular, more influential by the day. And here he is at a campus exchanging in ideas. And there are a number of Charlie Kirk's ideas that I couldn't have disagreed with more. But the idea that you can't go to a college campus without getting assassinated is disgusting. It is awful. And it should not matter if you agree with Charlie Kirk's politics in any way to condemn this and say we have to be better than this. And we have to stop just saying we have to be better than this. We have to make some adjustments. They're not easy. To find enough people to come together is not easy. But whether it's the Hortmans, whether it's attacks in cities, whether it's an individual trying to engage in ideas of thoughts, including with people who oppose him, and he gets brutally murdered, it is a sad, sad stretch for our country. We'll talk about this a lot today, including right here at the start, with a man who is incredibly kind to us with his time because he is so essential on days like this. It's our friend Jimmy Galliano is here, 25 years with the FBI, just completed two terms as a mayor in New York. And Jimmy, on days like this, I thank you so much for going on. The FBI, about an hour and 10 minutes ago, released a photo trying to enlist the public, classifying this as a person of interest. What are your thoughts on the photo and what the FBI has said so far today?
Well, first of all, Chad, good to join you. I hate that it's always under these kind of circumstances, but I did appreciate the appropriate way you kind of framed this today. I was in New York City this morning, and it's the same place I was 24 years ago on 9/11. Yeah. I know you're not having me on for a 9/11 remembrance or recollections, but my gosh, to your point, on that day we lost 3,000 Americans because of political and ideological differences. And what happened yesterday afternoon on a campus in Utah was something similar from everything that we can tell right now. And we want to be careful, and, you know, as a retired FBI agent, we try not to leap to conclusions, and obviously things can lead you in one direction, and as you aptly pointed out, the FBI has released a photo, a still image, actually two of them, of a person of interest, and for your listeners, well, what the heck does that mean? What's a person of interest? Is he a suspect? Well, he could be wanted because he's a material witness. But from everything I'm hearing through channels is this is the suspect. This is the person that they are seeking to question regarding this just utterly horrific act yesterday, Chad.
What does it say about the necessary security now, Jimmy, where we witnessed not one but two attempts on Donald Trump's life last year? We witnessed in this city Vance Belter going to multiple homes, trying to kill the Hoffmans, killing the Hortmans. And here's Charlie Kirk, who, because of his success, because of his notoriety, because of individuals who don't agree with him, I know he brings his own security, but you can't cover everything. What do we have to look at now, Jimmy, regarding just security and just private citizens, let alone politicians, when they want to speak out or when they want to just go about and live their everyday life?
Well, you know, Chad, I always hate to use, you know, cliches and, you know, trite phraseology. But, you know, when you talk about a new normal, you know, this country is no stranger to political violence. I mean, in our history, we're coming up on 250 years old as a fledgling democracy. We've had four presidents. We've only had 47. We've had four of them that were assassinated while in office. And you highlighted some of the other, you know, attacks or attempted assassinations. And political violence is something that, you know, in a democracy where we profess fealty to democratic principles, where the best man, the best woman should win the job, the person that has the most votes, that has the most constituency, should win, and we can disagree vigorously. And look, I also heard what you said about Charlie Kirk, and you and I probably disagree with some of the things he said. We agree with some of the things he said. But the fact is, yeah, Charlie Kirk always argued that, hey, let's meet in the public square. Let's not roll our sleeves up and go to fist.
Correct.
But let's talk about this. And that's what you do every day on the radio. You talk about things. You bring them up. You discuss things. You debate them. And that's the sad thing. Now, to your question about security, here's the problem. Charlie Kirk is not a protected government official. So there was no Secret Service sweep there. There were no drones flying over campus to make sure that none of the rooftops were occupied by a sniper. There wasn't screening like you would have at a presidential event where everybody goes through a magnetometer. There were no bomb sniffing dogs. And yes, Charlie did have a security detail. He did take his security seriously. He knew he was the subject of threats. And he did. And I think he had a detail out there. I don't want to criticize the police department, the police force, because I'm not out there boots on the ground in Utah. I don't know what their resources were. I don't know what the threat indicators were at the time. But my understanding is you had 3,000 people gathered in a relatively small space on a campus, and you had six police officers out there. Now, if you do the math, it just doesn't stack up. Now, look, if you'd have put 20 or 30 people out there, would that have stopped this? I don't know. But, yes, is this something in the future that needs to be looked at? It's sad that we don't need to just worry about security for our elected officials. We also have to worry about security for people who talk about politics and policy.
Let's talk about yesterday when the FBI brought in a couple people. And even, Jimmy, when we're on the air yesterday, it was reported quickly that they had apprehended someone. And my default, and I think it was a mistake, was, okay, they have the shooter. It seemed like this was close, and they have the person. We since have found out that they've let those individuals go. We don't know the depth of those conversations. I did see in their press conference today one of the law enforcement officers encouraging people to stop harassing these individuals. So that, I think, is a pretty good indication they're trying to let these folks go on with the rest of their lives. What does it say to you about the initial arrest and the amount of information they've shared so far?
Yeah, so, you know, there's always a fine needle that you have to thread in regards to how much information released to the public, what's important to crowdsource, get the information out as quickly as possible, because if it's a public safety consideration, or you need the public to crowdsource something, like in the case of releasing these two still photographs right now, to try to have somebody say, hey, I know that guy, he's my neighbor. Or, hey, I know that guy, I stood next to him down on the ground, you know, out in front of the tent where Charlie Kirk was. Having said that, I think there's always a knee-jerk reaction in everything, right? The pendulum always swings too far one way and then over course corrects the other way. I think that what director Kash Patel has tried to do, and he's doing it in his mind for transparency purposes and to speak truth to power, is he feels that in the past, you know, the FBI was very circumspect about what information they would release regarding motive. And yesterday when he jumped out and made that announcement, I think, one, yes, that could help quell public fears that there might be a madman on the loose, which obviously this guy still is on the loose, but I think it was premature. There's a distinct difference between a person of interest and a suspect. Now, a suspect is not guilty. A suspect is not, you know, necessarily the person who did the heinous crime. But a person of interest is somebody that could just be a material witness. So I think putting that out there that we have somebody in custody and law enforcement is interviewing them now, I think it was premature because then he had to immediately walk it back in another tweet. And then obviously the director of public safety in Utah had to do, and the Utah governor had to do the same thing. It's a tough job. They're doing this as this thing is unfolding, Chad. But yes, I thought that might have been, I hate to use the term sloppy, but I think that could have been handled a little better.
Couple last points with Jimmy Galeano. So kind to join us. 25 years of FBI experience. And so on a day like this, when the country is reacting and reeling and trying to learn more about this investigation, reports, Jimmy, in the last hour or so about potentially a second person may have been on this roof at this point. How much of the information you just talked about, the information shared, and was it sloppy, was it not sloppy? Where is this balance, Jimmy, where you know the public may know something about this individual, and there might be key parts where this could change the investigation, and how far you go, including reports of maybe another person potentially on the rooftop?
Sure. And that's something that I dealt with as an FBI official when I had to make comments to the media in regards to an ongoing investigation. You certainly don't want to tip off the perpetrator or perpetrators. But at the same token, you need help in this instance. Look, Chad, there were 3,000 people at this event. And if you've watched the videos like all of us have seen online,
yes.
I mean, half of them or more had their camera phones up and they were videoing mm-hmm. the event. So the amount of video, whether it was security camera footage from the campus itself or whether or not it was, you know, from a civilian that just happened to be there in attendance, that has to be ground through to determine, hey, what's a dead end and what's a live lead. And it is a tough job, and that's why, you know me, I like to level criticism where it's due, but I'm also really careful and cautious in the immediate aftermath because I've been there and I know how tough it is where you want to make sure the public is, one, first and foremost, safe. Number two, that the public is not fearful unduly, meaning that, you know, you don't let them know that there isn't a continuing threat as soon as possible. And then number three, you don't tip off the bad guys so that they can either escape or hurt the good guys. And then number four, you need to rely on the public. In this information, this digital information age, you need to rely on the public to crowdsource things like that. And those are the four things that you've got to kind of wrap your brain around and figure out the right, you know, the right mixture. And I think that's the tough thing for officials right now out in Utah, Chad.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. Stay safe, and we'll talk again soon.
Sounds good, Chad. Take care.
James Galeano, 25 years FBI experience, giving us great insight on what the investigation might be like, security, and other questions. You want to react to what Jimmy had to say? This is a topic we will discuss throughout the show. Will we only talk about it? No, but it will be by far the number one topic. In fact, Major Garrett is going to join us in about 10 minutes or so on the D.C. side, but we're going to look at your texts and your comments all day long. 651-461-9226.
not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're saying exactly you know what why people it's not, outside of Cleveland you know, think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Dave, jump in. What do we have for our bumper music theme today?
Well, it's a difficult day for everybody, I'm sure. So it's simply a bumper music theme of peace and love, Chad, because I think we need a lot more of that in this world and this country.
We absolutely do. Let's get to a number of texts, and we'll look at ones from all sides of the conversation. We're not cherry-picking in any way to say, oh, boy, great show, great this. That does not take place. We're actually on issues of opinions more likely to point out the ones where you're disagreeing with me to provide a contrast to the conversation. Among the texts, really, Presidential Medal of Freedom? He's giving them out like candy now. Tragic death, but give me a break. The president clearly gives out Presidential Medal of Freedom, that honor to people he likes and who are loyal and who have been friendly to him. Rush Limbaugh being the prime example. I'm not surprised. This is who Donald Trump is. I'm going to talk about Donald Trump at different points today. This is one I'm just not going to spend a lot of time on because I just keep thinking about a wife and two daughters, one and three. And no matter if you love Charlie Kirk and where he stood or you hated Charlie Kirk and where he stood. And by the way, if you did, you're wrong. You can have passionate disagreements, but you shouldn't hate individuals unless they're extraordinarily outliers. I want people to think about those folks and the rest of their life without a husband and without a dad. A one-year-old will probably won't have memories of their father. Hey, Chad, not going to have Matthew Dowd on anytime soon. Hillary going to win a landslide. Nice, hateful analysis on Charlie Kirk, too. Hateful partisan hack. Okay, this show hasn't had Matthew on 4 years, 5 years. I don't know how long. Matthew changed his views on a number of issues, his rhetoric on a number of issues. So I made the decision years ago to stop having Matthew Dowd on. And Matthew Dowd was absolutely wrong in what he said yesterday. Clear cut, 100%. The election in 2016, months and months ahead of it, did I think Hillary would win? Sure, I did. But as we grew closer, I said frequently it was going to be a close race. The night of it, did I still lean Hillary? Yeah. But of course, and by the way, hateful analysis, Charlie Kirk? Don't think so. I've called this out every which way possible to say this is abhorrent, this is vile, this is grotesque. But I'm also not going to say I agreed with everything he said, but bravo to him, more than a lot of other individuals, to go out there and have the debate. And of course, the person is conveniently forgetting when I was, for years, I said Biden wasn't enough for the job, or when I still say on a regular basis, I don't agree with the far left. This is part of our issue, that people only want to hear what they want to hear, and we have so many people who are locked in to one side or the other and will only listen to, wait, he criticized some people on the left. I'm just going to omit that. Oh, he's just a partisan hack. I mean, Dave, remind people what happened when someone called in yesterday when we were just finishing up the Kirill talk and somebody called in to tell us about Kirk, which we were just seeing, but we decided to take a break so there would be a little bit of a natural separation between just a casual sports conversation and an incredibly serious conversation. What did the caller say?
The caller said something to the effect of, might not be the exact words, but very close, the liberals killed Charlie Kirk.
Yeah, including us, right? Wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it was maybe it you liberals, something of that nature. Yes. Yes. But yeah. Just immediately going right to that, the liberals.
Among the texts, keep going here. Kirk peddled in hate, period. Kirk believed in zero gun control. Kirk was evil. This is on the right. So because you don't agree with him, he's evil. That's so much of our issue in this country, Dave. And it's driven by a lot of powerful people. It's driven by social media. And it's driven by the fact it is rewarded on that. And again, there were a number of comments he offered up on gun control I did not agree with, on race, I did not agree with. But I'm now going to decide if someone doesn't agree with me, they're evil, everyone, please.
Yeah, and then we can have the fight that we did yesterday about which side of the political aisle is more evil and more violent. And I mean, goodness gracious.
Let's see. Patel is way out of his depth, completely wrong to put a sycophant in charge of the FBI. Never should have been confirmed. Yeah, Cash Patel was not equipped for that job. Neither is Dan Bongiorno. Absolutely not. And then we read, yesterday, and we didn't even get to it, how, these three individuals who've been with the FBI forever were forced out, and they're pointing out, Dave, as we discussed off here, the loyalty test that you're now taking with the FBI.
Yeah.
Not loyalty to the investigation, not loyalty to the FBI, not loyalty to the country, but loyalty to the commander-in-chief. That's what we're doing here. Chad, lifetime Republican, think you're doing a really good job. You're being very respectful on Charlie Kirk and his capabilities. Thank you. The radical left doesn't want debate, thus they don't allow conservative speakers on campus. We talked about this yesterday. This is not new. Many people have been talking about this for decades. I'm in that group. The left, I don't even think it's the radical left, by the way. The left so often pushes back at allowing conservatives to speak on campuses. To me, the utmost example in this state was Condoleezza Rice. Years after she had the Bush administration finished, she's the Secretary of State. And there was pushback. What did I read yesterday? There was a push to prevent Kirk from showing up. And it was like just dozens in favor, Dave, but thousands against. That's it. Just keep going, Dave, to people where you just hear what you want to hear. That's what we do in this country with so many people. And it's, don't you think it's just an enormous mistake?
Of course it is. That's all what social media is. It's the algorithms building our echo chamber, and now we're trying to build it in real life, too. Good for us. Great.
Let's pause. Let's get to Major in a matter of moments. Let's talk a little bit about Aquarius. Aquarius is a company that started in 1987, earning the right to be recommended for me when I purchased the first house in 1993. I'd heard enough positive comments about Aquarius. I'd witnessed it in action. So when I've moved a few times during that run, not a lot, but a few times, I've made sure Aquarius is a part of my home, whether it's the Great Connecticut Drinking Water System, whether it's water softer. And now this is such a reminder, your utility closet. You look in there and for some of us, it's like, oh, what am I going to do? For others, you can make adjustments. But how about your furnace? Now, you don't need your furnace when it's going to be in the upper 70s and 80s, like this stretch. But guess what? It's not that far away. And right now at AquariusHomeServices.com, they are offering up a $29, I repeat, a $29 furnace tune-up. Don't wait. Track them down now. AquariusHomeServices.com.
it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
The best, Major Garrett, is with us, like all of our guests, like Jimmy Galliano. Major is on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. We're coming up in about 24 hours since Charlie Kirk was engaging in a debate on ideas at Utah Valley State, and he was brutally killed. As someone who's been a part of Washington, D.C., covering it for years, what stood out to you most about the reaction in D.C. to the murder of Charlie Kirk?
Not much stood out to the reaction, because it has and did follow lines that are becoming all too ritualistically followed. We condemn violence in a bipartisan way. We ask that we grieve as a nation. And then bit by bit, incrementally, within 24 to 48 hours, we move on. And what is striking to me in this moment is that some writers have suggested this might be a watershed moment. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. There have been plenty of opportunities going all the way back to Gabby Giffords and a shopping center in Arizona to have a watershed moment for this nation to collectively and individually turn away from politically motivated violence. And we have not, quite the opposite. I hope this is a watershed moment. I hope it is, for all concerned, a time to say that what is at play in America is a kind of false argumentation that if you don't win an election, the dangers to you are so pronounced that you have no other alternative but to treat those who won the most recently decided election as your enemies, and to think of them and to describe them as your enemies, and to reduce them to a place of some human existence in your social media feeds, in your conversations with others, or in actions that you might take. And what the founders of this country bequeathed to us and gave to us as a sacred, sacred gift is the ability to live differently than any society before. No society constructed before ours made the choices that we made, which is to resolve our differences in a political atmosphere bounded by a constitution, and not to resort to violence, not to resort to a system where who your father was determined your entire economic, political, religious destiny, that you had the freedom to choose lots of things, and with that freedom came responsibilities, a responsibility to keep this bequest from our founders going. And one of the key obligations of that is to do so peacefully, peacefully. Not contentedly, but peacefully.
No,
and there's
exactly.
There's a false construct in our conversation now that it doesn't have to be peacefully, or that if you're peaceful and civil, you're somehow a coward. And that's not true. That is hostile to the truth, and it's hostile to our history, to our better history, not to all of our history, but to our better history.
Here is another false construct, in my opinion, too, Major, that if an individual is in some sort of role, whether as a politician, a pundit, in some way, if he or she has very strong, passionate views, but still can deliver them with respect, that somehow they're lumped in with others who offer up hateful rhetoric, when that couldn't be further from the truth. When you get to some individuals who clearly are not bothered in any way by violence, automatically condemn the others, to somehow tie those folks with individuals who put in some work and put in some thought and express disagreements which is the key part of our freedom of speech, which, by the way, whether you agreed or not with Kirk, when he was on campuses or engaging with Gavin Newsom on a podcast or Bill Maher on his podcast, that's precisely what was taking place. And that is dramatically different from immediately condemning any sort of comments that might have been passionate and might have had facts, but because it's not on your team, you are now my enemy. You're instantly someone I don't want to associate with.
Right. And that takes political differences and political divisions to an unsustainable level. Because if you can't coexist, and if you can't cooperate, and if you can't view someone who you differ with politically as part of the American experience, then this all begins to break down. And not only does the American experiment begin to break down, the ideas and the basic glue of a civilization begin to break down. And what our founders and the creators of this country aspired to was not just a civilization, but a civilization that aspired to things. Did it achieve all the things it aspired to and wrote down in the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights? No, it didn't. And it was a hard struggle to realize some of the things that we aspired to, but that we left out. That's been a part of our struggle. And lots of people, whether it's for labor rights or civil rights or other kinds of rights in our country, either got beat up, some of them were killed, some of them were jailed. Those were struggles, real struggles. But in pursuit of something that was aspirational, that reached for our best intentions. And when I've traveled the country, traveled the world rather, Chad, covering many presidents of the United States, and I've always said one of the great privileges, probably the greatest privilege of my life next to being a father, one of the things that I always notice when I went to other countries is people would say to me, lots of countries have written things down they aspire to. Your country, in ways other countries don't, doesn't pretend to try to reach that. You actually do try to reach it. You don't play off what you wrote down as just a kind of set of words on paper. You actually take it into yourselves as a country and try to live up to it. Most countries don't do that. Most countries just write it down and say, yeah, 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 and do whatever they go, they want to do. That's one of the things I always took great pride in our country about, that we do try to do these things better. And we think about, is tomorrow in America going to be better than today, collectively and individually? And these spasms of violence do genuine damage to our ability to have that aspiration and the focus required to pursue it.
This is Major Garrett. Let's pause right here. Let's come back, get Major's thoughts on Charlie Kirk and his association with the president, and how helpful he was, in particular, in the last election, Donald Trump winning decisively over Kamala Harris, and also what the president had to say in light of the murder of his good friend, Charlie Kirk. Back with Major Moments. I want to talk Pella right now and just say I am very fortunate to have a number of sponsors who I have worked with for an extended period of time. With Pella, the previous home I was in, I was not the original builder, but I moved in within a few years. The other couple had to move, and I benefited because they had made the effort, paid the money to have Pella windows and doors at the house. And for almost 20 years, it worked out very effectively, including when I stopped at the showroom in Plymouth a couple years ago, decided to have them come out, decided to work with the radio station, and they replaced some windows in the house and pretty significantly changed my kitchen. Well, I wasn't thinking about moving then. It turned out it was the right time. And when I moved in another house, guess what I made sure of? Pella windows and doors. Showrooms, the one I went to in Plymouth, Woodbury, Brooklyn Park. You can go online, PellaNorthland.com, and have them come out to your cabin, your home, your condo for free, and they'll give an assessment of your place. Right now in September, pretty good offer to say the least. 0% APR for 48 months or $250 off qualifying windows and $500 off qualifying doors. Pick your option. You'll love it. You'll go with the best. PellaNorthland.com. We return to the conversation with our friend Major Garrett. Of course, we're talking about the murder of Charlie Kirk. The FBI still looking for a person of interest, and some reports also potentially a second person on the roof where the shooting took place, about 200 yards from where Kirk was starting his speech and the give and take, which was going to take place. Amplify a little bit on Turning Point USA and the role it played with younger voters with the president in his victory in 24. He did a number of things differently. You know, he talked about his son and the ideas, talked about TikTok, talked about going on Joe Rogan. But in seeing multiple reports, just reminded me of just the enormous differences, Major, from the 20 election and the 24 election. In the swing states where Joe Biden and Donald Trump battled, those seven key swing states, in the 24 election, Donald Trump improved with younger voters over 20 points. And I'm not saying Charlie Kirk was the only reason, but if you want to look at the most dominant reasons why, and you're looking for individuals who played a role, Charlie Kirk has to be high on that list.
Charlie Kirk is high on that list. We had on the takeout last night, Michael Whatley, former chairman of the Republican National Committee, now a candidate for Senate in the state of North Carolina. I asked him, is there a second Trump term without Charlie Kirk? His answer very simply was no, there isn't.
Wow.
There just isn't. And you described the seven states. Let me just let people know what Trump won them by. Trump won Georgia by 126,000 votes, North Carolina by 90,000, Pennsylvania by 200,000, Wisconsin by 50,000, Michigan by 234,000, Arizona by 197,000, Nevada by 79,000. All of those numbers are larger than any margin of victory in the previous two elections in those swing states, either for Trump in 2016 or Biden in 2020. Something happened, and Charlie Kirk, during COVID, did a lot of soul searching, did a lot of reading, and believed that during COVID, decisions were made and ideas were let loose in this country that he formidably opposed. I don't agree with all the things that Charlie Kirk said about COVID, the 2020 election, Martin Luther King, a lot of other things. But what he did was, instead of working with inside the Trump campaign and writing ads or becoming a lobbyist or things like that, he decided to go to college campuses and talk to possibly like-minded people, but also just young people in general, and be kind of an evangelist for this populist, nationalist, conservative ideology and see what would happen. And he found a following, and that following grew, and it was accelerated by social media. And in addition to that, he didn't just, if you will, preach. He decided to put it into practical political application, registering people to vote and mobilizing them when it was time to vote. And he learned a lot of lessons in the 2022 midterms where Republicans underperformed, and he got more aggressive about the mobilization. He embraced early voting and voting by mail, things that Republicans were still very downcast about.
He was, including the president.
Including the president, still is now. One of his legacies in 2024 is use every legal means available to identify voters, have them fill out their ballots, and to participate. That is the essence of prevailing in politics, outworking those with whom you are opposed, outworking them, persuading, and being willing to stand up for what you believe in. And this is what also Charlie added, which is what made him not only visible, but a voice of persuasion. He would take on critics and say, prove me wrong. Tell me why I think is wrong from your perspective. Sometimes he persuaded them. Sometimes they persuaded him. But whatever, it was an open, visible dialogue. That was kind of new. It's not new in America, but it was new in our modern era. And during one of those exact exchanges is when a public murder occurred.
Yep.
In Orem, Utah, of all places. Mm-hmm. There's no place in America where, oh, that would be commonplace. I'm not suggesting it is, but it was a public murder. And I
last thing, let me jump in, sir.
To one of the eyewitnesses, and their level of trauma about it is almost indescribable, and understandably so.
Yeah, understandably so. We have about 2.5 minutes left.
Mm.
You obviously watched the president. You discussed it, following him as closely as you have since 2015. As expected, and what else stood out to you when the president addressed the nation yesterday?
To say that radical left Democrats are directly responsible and that his administration will take every effort to find anyone like that comes very close to suggesting that there will be a policing of speech and a kind of crackdown about anything that opposes the administration. In the context, it was worrisome to me that the president would go in that direction. To what I just said a moment ago and what those on the right and left are lionizing about Charlie Kirk, he was willing to engage in public debate and discourse, to have people disagree with him in public, and to accept that as an essential, rational, and necessary part of the American experience. I don't think it would be in honor of Charlie Kirk to crack down on speech in America as a way to honor him. And it sounded like the president was...
It would be the opposite,
that,
right?
It would be the opposite. And it would, and yeah. It sounded like the president was moving in that direction in ways, because it was a scripted address, had intention behind it. I don't know how those intentions will manifest, but that part of it left me uneasy.
I am with you 100%. I'm going to expand on that later. I just think he missed a great opportunity to also mention what happened to Gabby Giffords, what happened in this state with the Hortmans,
yes.
And it was all involving individuals who were sympathetic to him and pointing the finger quickly. When I'm not asking him to not have passionate views, but this is a time to be a uniter, and I think he passed on that. Once again, appreciate the flexibility. Thank you so much. I'll be checking out the takeout when I listen to it later today. Thanks, my friend.
Okay. Thanks.
Major with us again, the takeout. You can watch it live on the CBS app. You can get it as a podcast, as I do, or when the Twins are playing late, listen to it right here on CCO at 10 p.m. Let's go to CBS and Ari coming up next on CCO.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.